Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, all 7 Rounds in Heaven is back. We're brought to you by the Armchair Media Network. Kendall Hinton didn't deserve that. It is I, Rob Paul, a.k.a. a fan of the worst 11-0 team in NFL history. And with me, as always, is AJ. The Seahawks only win weird, Marchese.
Oh my, this was a normal win with a weird ending, Rob. Get over it.
Well, there was a lot of weird. A lot of weird took place. Just like every Seahawks game.
Very normal game.
Yeah. Normal for the Seahawks, maybe. Weird for everyone else. Today, we're talking all the NFL rookies who thrived and struggled in Week 12. Let's hit it.
Seven rounds
in heaven with my baby, driving up to Cleveland, maybe looking for a Lawrence or Sewell. Don't draft specialists on the first day, eh? Don't draft specialists on the second day, eh? Maybe draft a punter in the sixth. We'll see. Let's go 7 rounds. Let's go 7 rounds together. Let's go 7 rounds forever. And that's a song. The wait is finally over. Football is in full effect, with many teams strutting their stuff. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online.
Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. Bet Online gives you more options to wager than any place online.
Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses.
BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Okay, AJ.
You're like a one-man
before we
show.
Get into that. That was multiple people. That was all my roommates.
Oh, that's cool.
So
fun.
Before we get into NFL rookies, let's talk opt-out declarations and Senior Bowl acceptances. Quickly, I swear this is going to carry over. We're seeing guys opt-out and declare now that we're late in the season and their teams are out of it and they'd rather not play the last two games in a meaningless bowl.
Yep.
So they're opting out and declaring. I think that's going to carry over past the COVID season.
I think it will as well. And again, as we've talked about, it just comes to if the scouts are going to quote-unquote punish them for it or not, right?
And I think neither of us have any issues with guys doing this. Like, do I really need to see Terrace Marshall? Like, it'd be nice to see him against Patrick Surtain, but he's also given me 2 years of great tape. Like, I don't think him having – I mean – him having a dominant game against Patrick Surtain would certainly help him, but they're not going to. He's got two terrible freshman quarterbacks. Like, I'm not too worried that he opted out and declared. No. And along with Terrace Marshall, obviously the LSU wide receiver, we got Arkansas running back Rakeem Boyd, UCF wide receiver Marlon Williams, Texas tackle Samuel Cosmi, Oklahoma State tackle Tevin Jenkins, Florida State corner Asante Samuel Jr., and Texas safety Caden Stearns. And so I basically none of those guys were headed towards playing in a meaningful bowl game.
Not at all.
So it makes total sense. I mean, a couple of those guys our potential first round picks, Terrace Marshall, Samuel Cosmi, and Sonny Samuel Jr. And two more games of tape, I don't think it really matters. I'm excited to see them all declare. I really like Asante Samuel Jr. I think Marlon Williams, the UCF wide receiver, is going to be a really fun eval.
For sure.
I'm kind of surprised that Caden Stearns declared, only because he wasn't very good this year. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who obviously had some first-round clout after his freshman year. But other than that, I think pretty much every, and the thing is, like, Rakeem Boyd's a senior, and obviously this is the COVID season, so everybody gets an extra year of eligibility. So we've talked about it before. We're going to have to see seniors kind of decide that they're declaring.
The first 20 minutes of the show going down the stretch is just going to be you naming names of guys declaring. It's going to be sick.
Hey, the other thing is we're seeing all these guys grad transfer now, too. A lot of guys look like they're going to take advantage of their final extra year by grad transferring. We saw Mackenzie Milton, the UCF quarterback, is grad transferring. And obviously, in 2018, he was incredible before the leg injury. I mean, we just saw Temple quarterback Anthony Russo is also grad transferring. I think we're going to see a lot of that where it's like kind of fringy prospects, guys who are good college players, borderline, maybe draftable, potentially, or at least be in a training camp, guys. I think we're going to see a lot of those seniors become super seniors in grad transfer.
No, that's a good point. And just like we saw in the offseason, a lot of the, borderline draftable, late draftable FCS guys moving up to the FBS because of losing the season. And it's just all the ramifications of COVID. It's kind of interesting and extremely weird.
Yes. Super weird, super interesting, going to be weird draft process, weird tracking this. It's going to have an impact over the next this past draft, this draft, next year's draft, they're all going to be impacted by these types of things. It's going to be super weird, but I agree with you, super interesting. I mentioned Senior Bowl acceptances, AJ's favorite part of the show, where I name the offense, AJ tells me coolest player.
Okay.
Then I name the defense, and then AJ tells me the coolest player. It's the greatest part of the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, so senior offensive acceptances, not too many. Ohio State running back Trey Sermon, Arizona State wide receiver Frank Darby, and Southern Methodist tight end Kylan Granson.
I think the coolest player of that three players, Rob, is Frank Darby, who I was really excited about in the summer. The Pac-12 season's weird. We don't even see Arizona State play that much. But I'm still excited. I thought he could have been a huge riser, and I think he can go into Mobile, and if it happens, put on a show.
Yeah, Arizona State has played one game. He I think this is huge for him in particular, because like you mentioned, we both thought he was going to be a big-time senior receiver riser this year. I almost feel just with everything going on with Arizona State right now, maybe we won't see him play a game. Yeah. He got hurt in that first game and didn't really play. So this is actually massive for his draft stock, because he's a guy who looked like he could potentially be a top 100 pick.
Exactly. And so, this is one of the examples that guys who you kind of maybe forget about during the season, and like this weird-ass year really affects them. And then, hey, if the Senior Bowl happens, this is huge just on a personal level for his stock.
Okay, I'll give you the defensive ones now. A couple more. Houston edge Peyton Turner, Ohio State edge Jonathan Cooper, Ohio State linebackers Baron Browning and Tuff Borland, and Washington corners Elijah Molden and Keith Taylor.
The coolest player, Rob? Elijah Molden for sure, baby.
Wow, I'm shocked. You went 2 for 2. Maybe you're just playing up to my love for the Pac-12, but you went 2 for 2.
I think they're just the coolest. That's all I got to say. And hey, we saw Molden. We talked about him on this week's show, at the last episode, how dominant he was on Saturday. One of the best players in college football on the weekend, for sure. And you said you think he's a day 2 guy. I think the Senior Bowl is big for him, but like not that big, if that's fair. Like, you know, he's always not going to look the greatest in shorts and stuff. He's not the biggest. He's not the most athletic or anything like that. But when you get him on a field like that against the best of the best, and you know he's going to go out and compete his ass off, I think there's going to be a lot of people impressed with him.
Yeah, and he's also the other type of the type of guy where in the interviews, I don't know what the interview process is going to be like this year, but he's going to nail those too, just with the football IQ and the instincts you see on the field. I'm very excited to see him against, we've already talked about this, wide receiver group is shaping up to be pretty cool. So seeing Elijah Molden versus some of those guys is going to be fun. I also think Baron Browning's a guy who can do a ton for himself there because he is going to look really good in shorts.
Yeah.
Former five-star elite athlete, slowly putting it together now as a redshirt senior at Ohio State. He's a guy who I think could be so flashy, like he'll confirm himself as a top 100 guy there. So I'm excited to see him.
In a weaker linebacker group, he could be like a really big riser, like a la Willie Gay or something like that. But
just in terms of freaky athlete, plays really hard. And you're just banking on the other things coming later, like the instincts and whatnot.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But in this group, I do think, like you said, top 100 possible, but a little harder to make a huge climb, right?
I think Peyton Turner might be the most interesting one of the group.
Go ahead.
So he's battled injuries this season at Houston, but like he looks the part. He's 6'6", 270. Not like the most productive in terms of sack numbers, just 7.5 over the last 2 years, but that's in 16 games, and he was a force against the run before he got hurt. He had 4 sacks in 4 games, 9.5 TFLs. He's a guy who I know a lot of people on Draft Twitter are pretty excited to get a better look at. Like, he fucked up Tulane. I remember that week, their week one game, which was like week 7, but because they had so many games canceled on them, but I'm pretty excited to see what he looks like in Mobile.
Oh, definitely. I was just going to say, I saw a lot of hype for the acceptance on Draft Twitter. I haven't personally dug in yet, but he, for sure, really interesting guy.
Assuming the Senior Bowl actually happens, and Jim says it will.
What's your confidence meter at right now?
10. Full confidence in Jim. Big respect. Well, it's very dependent on if he takes the Lions GM job before or after. Okay, that's enough Nagy talk. Into Week 12 rookie superlatives. Let's start with the rookie quarterback rundown. We only had one real rookie quarterback play this week, which is the least since Week 1. Obviously, Burrow's done for the year. Tua was out with an injury. There was no like weird Jake Luton, Ben DiNucci game. We did get Kendall Hinton, and I'll get to him, but I'll let you start with Justin Herbert.
You know who I kind of miss is David Blau, and I was especially thinking that on Thanksgiving. I just miss watching him play football.
Don't he's going to start for Nagy when he's GM, so I don't know. Don't worry.
There you go, baby. All right. To players who actually matter, Justin Herbert, I'm not really sure how to surmise this performance for old Herbie. First, I'll say Herbert's going to be a very good quarterback in the NFL for a long time. I think that's clear now. This game specifically, he felt like he's a special rookie, which he is, but it was more rookie. Like there was a lot of really high highs and a lot of lows. To start at the end, as some great films do, he basically completed back-to-back Hail Marys. Only one of them counted, obviously. But he still made those plays. The one that did count, he looked like Eli Manning in the Super Bowl, breaking a sack and rolling out. and then the plays that followed were just absolute fucking bungling of a goal line sequence where Herbert threw one right into the ground. Not in a good way, obviously. Then the quarterback sneak that no one knew was coming, including his offensive line. It was a mess. But in totality of the game, it was just a lot of shorter throws. I felt like he felt the pressure a little bit and made like it was a lot of scrambly type of plays. The interception was really ugly. Like he stared down Hunter Henry, double clutched the ball and just never saw Trey White hovering around and he undercut it. But as he does every week, Herbert is always making those third and fourth down throws that are like tight windows and you're like, wow, he does something with his legs, makes the throw. It's always impressive. So it's just like, I don't know, like if you're one of the 17 Chargers fans, you feel bad about the game, but good about Herbert? I don't know. It was kind of a mucky performance. And I think we're at the point where, like, you fire Anthony Lynn if you have a hire you feel really, really good about. And most importantly, it's going to continue to develop Justin Herbert. Like, I know it's been extremely ugly at times for Anthony Lynn, especially this week. But building on this awesome rookie season of Justin Herbert's is so much more important to the long-term success of the Los Angeles Chargers than stupid fucking clock management decisions. So it's like...
But hey. Yeah. At this point, I don't know how you justify keeping Anthony Lynn, because it's time after time.
Yeah,
for sure. That was pathetic. That was some of the worst clock management I've ever seen. I totally agree, get what you're saying is, if you have to go 6-10 for another year just to develop Justin Herbert by keeping everyone the same around him, and Shane Steichen's done a really good job with him, obviously, and Pep Hamilton has done a great job as their quarterback coach. I do get that, but if that means there's some interesting head coaching candidates on the offensive side of the ball this year.
For sure, yeah.
I guess it's dependent on how strongly you feel if you're Tom Telesco hiring a Joe Brady or an Eric Bieniemy, if you can get him, which I don't know if they could. But the other thing is, the Chargers job's got to be a better-looking job than a lot of other options, because you're getting year two of this quarterback who has shown everything that you want to see. He's having the greatest rookie quarterback season I think ever. Looks like a future top 10 quarterback, if not already. And just jumping to the other side of the ball, Joey Bosa was a fucking monster in this game.
Yeah,
you have two building blocks on each side of the ball. You also have to keep in mind, you have Derwin James coming back off injury. You have Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Hunter Henry. You have pieces all around. I gotta think this is one of the most appetizing jobs for a offensive genius type head coach.
Definitely. And you add in, it's Los Angeles. You got a brand new stadium. And everything about it is just really appealing. Now the question is the one thing keeping you away is that the Chargers are cursed. But I don't know. Yeah, that's what I mean. If you got the right hire, I have absolutely no problem firing Anthony Lynn. Because we talked about it, it's been bad. But I don't know. I just don't want them going out and hiring some defensive guy and we got to get this franchise on track and go 9-7. And then Herbert, starts to unravel a bit. Not saying I think he will, but, that's what you gotta fear. Because we've seen rookies have really good first seasons at quarterback and have fallen apart. So
his is different than Baker Mayfield's. His season is different than Baker Mayfield's. I'm assuming that's who you're generally thinking of. And I know you agree. And I think the funny thing is, you talked about this game and you weren't hard on Justin Herbert by any means, but obviously it was probably one of his either his second or worst game.
Bottom two game. Bottom two game for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Bills did a really good job against them. And when you think about it in the context of it was a rookie against a playoff team, it actually wasn't that bad of a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how good he has been. He has set the bar so high. If you could hire anyone as head coach, if you were the GM of the LA Chargers, and don't worry, AJ, I know you would never take that job, but if you were, who would be the number one coaching candidate on your list?
God, it's hard not to say Joe Brady. I keep going to the Joe Brady well, and I sound like a broken record, but it's hard not to say him right now.
It's just because you don't want someone else to get him.
That's true.
He's so young, and it feels inevitable that he's going to be a head coach at worst in 2 years.
And also, you can, if you watch those Carolina Panthers games and you look at the offense, you can just picture Justin Herbert in Teddy Bridgewater's spot and doing everything Teddy can, obviously, plus a lot. So,
yes,
there's a lot of the great vertical passing and the crossing routes, and those Herbert's already showed that he's a killer on both of those. So, plus you add in the athleticism, Herbert's a better athlete than Bridgewater, and it's just this could easily work. And
Can I pitch you on something?
Please.
I know we've talked about it before. And this is outside of just the Chargers hiring. If we've talked about how in today's NFL, it almost feels not smart to hire the defensive guy as your head coach, although we're seeing it work out, obviously, with Brian Flores and obviously Belichick's defensive guy, Mike Tomlin's defensive guy, but just in recent history, it seems smarter to go offense. Would you like? I'm very much in on Robert Saleh as a head coach, especially if he can poach McDaniel or LaFleur as his offensive coordinator from Shanahan's staff.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just applying to the Chargers, but would you feel good hiring Saleh with one of those guys as an OC?
I guess like you go back to Flores, who's really the only recent defensive head coach that's had success. You gotta have a
wrong. Vic Romeo Fangio. Crennel with the Texans and Raheem Morris with the Falcons.
Okay, well, neither of them were hired to be head coaches.
But they will be in a year.
I think it's gotta be more that CEO type defensive head coach, and I think. Obviously, Brian Flores isn't just that, but he is that as well, right? Like, he's clearly a defensive.
And I think Saleh is too, though. I think Saleh is too.
I think I do. I'm not disagreeing. I'm not ready to stake the Brian Flores title on Robert Saleh, but I do think he deserves to get a look.
Like, when I'm seeing, like, fucking Dennis Allen up for a head coaching job, like, that makes me question things. Like, if Dennis Allen ends up a head coach and Robert Saleh doesn't, that feels a little backwards, right?
Agreed. I know, like, the Lions are looking at Saleh, and I think that might be a better fit. I don't know. Maybe I just don't want Herbert to not be beautiful.
Yeah. I get you. I feel you. I hope Robert Saleh, Joe Brady, both end up head coaches somewhere. Because I think both of them are going to be a lot of fun as head coaches.
How about Dable with Herbert?
I was about to say Dable. I was about to say Byron Leftwich.
That'd both be really fun, for sure.
Yeah. Byron Leftwich feels like maybe a year or two further away than those other guys.
Agreed. And maybe he'd rather just hang around. Like, even like if he gets an offer, maybe hang around a little longer anyways. But, yeah, no, agree.
I think the ultimate plan is he'll be the head coach in waiting in Tampa.
Exactly, yeah.
We went way off on the tangent. That's my fault. I just love coaching talk. By the way, congrats to Will Hall taking over as Southern Miss's head coach. That was big for you, AJ.
Go Green Wave.
So anyway, we've talked enough about that. Let's talk about the other AFC West rookie quarterback who actually made his debut this week for the Denver Broncos. Former Wake Forest 1,000-yard wide receiver Kendall Hinton, who he went 1 for 9 for 13 yards with 2 picks against the Saints in probably the worst situation any team has ever put their quarterback in.
Nice screen throw to Noah Fant, though, Rob. That's my big breakdown.
my main takeaway is Pat Shurmur stupid?
Yes.
Like, what was their play calling was so bad.
Terrible.
Like, they didn't let him, they didn't give him easy throws. They were, like, pushing the, like, I know he only threw 9 passes, but there was, like, times where, like, pushing the ball downfield. This guy hasn't played quarterback in multiple years. He was essentially a backup part-time starter at Wake for, like, 2 years before he became a star slot there. Although, the social media posts saying he hadn't been tackled in 2 years, that was strange.
I told you, he scored a touchdown on every play.
Very much a starting wide receiver last year in the ACC. But yeah, I mean, I more put this as a joke. Not Kendall Hinton's fault. I feel so bad for him. But I'm glad he now has proven every fucking asshole on their couch wrong that they think they could play in the NFL.
Like, I totally feel bad for Kendall Hinton. But, like, also, it's kind of cool that he got to start. Well, actually, technically, didn't even get to start. That kind of sucks. But he got to play. They should have let him start, first of all. That's another slap in the face. But he got to play quarterback in the NFL. That's pretty fucking cool. So, I mean, I'm upset.
Congrats to you, Kendall.
Yeah, but good work, Kendall. You're our favorite player now.
Okay, let's jump into Offensive Rookie of the Week. Who you got?
I'm gonna save mine for primetime star, but I'm gonna audible off the top. I'm gonna go with Justin Jefferson, who, I mean, what, 7 catches, 70 yards, 2 touchdowns, and what would be a big game for a lot of wide receivers, period, let alone rookies. It's just almost ho-hum for Justin Jefferson now. Like, I don't even know like how many people talked about this performance. It's just like first touchdown was just an easy little post on the goal line. Wasn't flashy, but he ran it perfectly. Great acceleration in and out of the cut. Second touchdown, he caught it short of the goal line. Outmuscled the defender, got into the end zone. It's just like he's so damn good, but it's like it's almost like he just gets overlooked because he is so damn good already.
Yeah, he is a freak of nature. I mean, his route running ability is what's made the difference. I think I guess it's the fact that, like you kind of alluded to, he's so consistent that him having 70 yards and two TDs is almost expected now.
Yeah.
And it's funny because this was a week where a lot of the other top rookie receivers struggled.
Like, yeah, exactly.
And I'll get to it in a bit, but like we saw it with CD Lamb, we saw it with Chase Claypool, like Jalen Reagor did not play very well, like guys like that. And here's Justin Jefferson just absolutely dominating. I mean, poor Jerry Jeudy didn't get a catch, but that's for other reasons. But like he's arrived. He's going to at least be considered, I think, as a potential top 10 receiver next year.
Very much. And he already feels so much like a vet, like especially in the route run. You just watch him like play in, play out, and if you just focus on him, he doesn't feel like a rookie out there at all.
I think it was one of your tweets that really pointed out something that kind of stuck with me. It was obviously coming out of LSU, there's some questions about his speed. He ended up running a good 40, so it didn't actually really matter.
Yeah.
He's obviously not nearly as straight line speed explosive as a guy like Henry Ruggs or Jalen Reagor, but it's the fact that he just carries the speed through the routes. I think a piece to route running that maybe is forgotten about is the ability to keep speed through your route through the break. Like everything stays on time, and that alone can help create separation. It's little things like that, like the way he stems, to create separation, the way he sinks his hips and explodes through routes. Yeah. It's all the little things, and that's what makes him such an elite pass catcher already.
Absolutely. Well put, Rob.
Yes, I am a genius. I am a route running god. My offensive rookie of the week is Tristan Wirfs. I can't not watch him when I watch Tampa because, I mean, everything else is going wrong, it seems, on that offense. But Tristan Wirfs is, I think, making a push to be a top 10 offensive tackle. Like, he should go to the Pro Bowl this year. He's the best offensive lineman on that team. He was throwing people. Donovan Smith on the other side is already, like, his contract's ridiculous. And it looks even worse now seeing how immediately elite Tristan Wirfs is. Just, it's his balance, I think, that has really been the biggest thing to make him such an impact offensive tackle right away. Is he even when he like, let's say he oversets, he can get himself back to his spot.
Yeah.
And that's an underrated little part of, I think, being a pass block or pass pro in the NFL is keeping your balance, being able to work when you go the wrong way, when something happens. Like, because you're a 320-pound man blocking a 260-pound guy who runs a fucking 4.5 with a under a 7.3 cone and just absolutely violent hands. There's so much. Keeping everything on time as an offensive lineman, keeping your feet and hands in unison. He does it so well, and he's also an elite athlete. And he plays with that glass-eating edge. I'm in love with him. He was throwing Chiefs pass rushers. And in the run game, he's just a people mover. I think he's a franchise tackle. And I mean, it seems like Mekhi Becton and Jedrick Wills are as well. So what a class.
It's funny that you brought this up because definitely Tristan Wirfs deserves this. And I was going to mention – well, I'm going to mention Becton. And I was just going to tag on about Wirfs and Wills, saying like – honestly, especially Wills. Like Wirfs, I think, is getting the attention and 100% deservedly so. And it's almost like we don't talk about Jedrick Wills enough because, like you just said, he looks like a franchise tackle as well.
No, it's so true. I think it's because when anyone really talks Cleveland at this point, it's a lot of just Nick Chubb and the offensive line as a whole, and not Baker Sox, individuals. Yeah. Whereas Wirfs and Becton are well, less so for Wirfs. Becton's the only player on the Jets' offense worth watching. And then with Wirfs, he's just already the best offensive lineman on a team that is Tom Brady. So those guys are talked about a little bit more than Jedrick Wills when that whole offensive line's been playing exactly such great football. I mean, Wyatt Teller, stud.
Yes.
Okay, who's your defensive rookie of the week?
Actually, can I just add, I was listening to Overnight Sports Talk, and they were doing like a calling in and saying the best trio you can make on NFL teams on offices, you know, as the triplet game. I swear right to God, one guy came called in from Cleveland, and he added Wyatt Teller to like the Cleveland trio. It made me so happy. This is like 3 a.m.
That's such a Cleveland move.
I loved it. Defense of the Rookie of the Week. Hey, usually I say it's slim pickings. This week it was a really easy one because Jeremy Chinn had 2 touchdowns. So kind of hard to not pick him. Back-to-back touchdowns, both scoop and score fumble recoveries. The first one kind of right place, right time, where it was easy, scooped it, housed it, no big deal. The second touchdown, he ripped the ball out of Cook's hands in a scrum and then finished the job. It was really impressive. And they happened literally back-to-back possessions. So it was really cool. On top of that, 13 tackles. That's big time. Had a hit on Kirk. I thought he looked pretty nice in coverage, too. So it wasn't even just the big, flashy plays. It was play in, play out, consistent, good football from Jeremy Chinn. And we've seen that from him all year, obviously, with the flashy plays on top. Chinn is right there in the Defensive Rookie of the Year race.
Yeah. It's not super clear. Like, offense is just Herbert versus Jefferson at this point. Defense is, again, not super clear. I think it's like Chinn is clearly a top three candidate. I'm going with Chase Young for my defensive rookie of the week. I think he's very much still in it.
Yep.
He looked great against the Cowboys. Maybe not talked about as much because they just ended up running through Dallas. But he constant pressure, came in with the sack, looked really good sitting on the edge and ensuring out run plays. The Washington defense is underrated. As a Steelers fan, I'm a little worried on a short week playing Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Chase Young, I get that he isn't having the dominant season. I think I talked about this last week even, that Nick Bosa has had as a rookie. But I don't think you could ask for much more from a rookie defensive lineman than what Chase Young has given them. He looks like he's a future all pro. I mean, like, I get like 4.5 sacks in 10 games is not going to blow you away, but when you watch it, he's impacting so much, and it's for sure not just as a pass rusher. He is going to be, I think, one of the best run defending edges in the league. He's a cornerstone, and on a defensive line where like Daron Payne's a dude, and Montez Sweat really is an impactful player.
Oh yeah, like, he's got what, like 8 sacks or something like that now.
If Washington can get a quarterback and really start to build that offense, like they've got a chance to be winning the NFC East in a year. I mean, technically, they've got a chance this year. So
they might win it this year, exactly. The sacks are going to come for Chase Young. I've got no doubt about that. So, like, as I kind of alluded to in our Instagram post, by the way, follow at @7RoundsInHeaven on Instagram and Twitter.
Sick plug.
Like, I just wanted people to sit down and pay attention to Chase Young because all the hot take people, not even hot take, all the box score scouts like to go in and look and say he's got a couple sacks on the year and that's it. I hope they sat down with their turkey and watched him because this was a great game. Like, just appreciate him and the sacks are going to come. You can definitely see it.
Who if the season ended today, who would be your defensive rookie of the year? I know it's a tough question because, again, it's not super clear, but who would you pick?
Jeremy Chinn right now, but that's also recency bias.
I think so too.
Yeah, and he's been like one of my favorites from the start too.
But he, outside of like one game, he hasn't had a bad game.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. The Bucks game,
and that was coming off the injury.
Yep.
Yeah, and that was coming off the injury.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. I think he has meant more to the Panthers defense, maybe game to game, than any other defensive rookie, and that's kind of what separates it.
Agreed. Yeah, on a defense that has a lot of rookies playing.
Correct. Speaking of, we have not talked about Derek Brown in a while. Anyway,
we haven't.
Who's the worst rookie this week for you?
This one's not really fair from me, I'm going to be honest. It's more so
Kendall Hinton.
Yep, Kendall. Imagine if I did that. It's such a dick move. this one was more like worst game plan and more of an underwhelming performance. I put Antoine Winfield Jr. I know if you put it at the scope of himself, it wasn't that bad. But like watching him standing like stagnant in the middle of the field while Mahomes was just slinging it to Tyreek Hill, it just wasn't a pretty sight. Like I don't know, like he couldn't really make the plays. Like it's asking a lot. But like having Davis cover Hill all game with little help was silly. But it just wasn't a good look seeing Winfield like late to react with all these balls sailing down the field, or just like, I don't know. It's hard for me to really ding him. I know I am, but like, it was just such a shit game plan from Tampa. And then like they fixed it a bit in the second half, but the game was, they didn't really have a shot of coming back.
It's over.
If they just, I don't know. Did they just not expect them to attack deep? That doesn't make sense. Like, I don't know, man. It kind of. I'm not upset about it, but I just wanted Winfield to go out there and like have a spectacular game. So I'm just, it's more of an underwhelming, but still.
No, I think that's fair. I'm kind of same boat as you, where I didn't have a extremely blatant like this guy was a complete liability rookie on this week, but I did go with Isaiah Simmons, who coming off that big game, you're hoping to see him kind of build on it.
Mm-hmm.
Against that kind of Patriots heavy set running attack, they kind of played him less than I think they would have if it was against a different type of offense. Like it was a lot of Devondre Campbell at times, kind of a consistent rotation between the two of them. He only ended up playing about 30% of the snaps, and it was a lot more as a, just for his blitzing. Which, again, I think is a really smart way to get him involved. Vance Joseph has done a really good job kind of deploying him as a blitz-specific player. But he took a bad penalty, and he was getting washed by Lyman. And he's really struggling to stack and shed blocks and read keys and make an impact as a run defender. And that's going to be ultimately what I think keeps him off the field. And that's why Devondre Campbell ended up – they just trust Devondre Campbell more as a interior player, as mm-hmm. like defending the run. And so I guess it was just kind of a letdown because I was hoping to see another big game just building up that Seahawks game. And
yeah,
his snap catch just dropped so much. And yeah, so that is that.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Oh, I was just moving on. So you go ahead.
I'm going to. I don't know if this is the time for it, but I wanted to bring it up because I noticed something funny. But for the Patriots, the two picks directly before Michael Onwenu in the sixth round at the top, it's kind of funny looking back. The Bengals took Akeem Adeniji, and then the Broncos took Nathani Muti, who I bet they both wish they could have had it back and took Onwenu. I don't know why I'm adding that now, but it just kind of sucks for them.
This is the only thing Michigan fans have to flex these days.
That's a good point.
Okay, I'm betting we both have the same primetime star from the afternoon Thanksgiving game, AJ. Am I guessing right?
We do, Rob.
Antonio Gibson, he was the gobbler, or whatever they call it, ran for 115 yards, 3 touchdowns against Dallas. He looked fantastic. I think the thing about him is he's such an athletic twitched up freak that you forget how big he is.
Yeah,
massive for a running back.
What is he? Was he 6'2"?
He's 6'2", 220. Yeah,
that's silly.
And just bouncing off tackles, and you saw that burst in the open field. And he is, I mean, if you were to look at who the best rookie running backs are this year, he's in the top three for sure, right?
It's Gibson.
The man has 11 rushing touchdowns. The man has 11 rushing. Oh, it's not James. I thought it was James Robinson, but I guess not.
And James Robinson, my king.
James Robinson's been the best rookie running back.
Correct. Yeah, yes.
But, and then Gibson and Swift. And I think that's definitely the top three. And what a dude. That's why I think they're a quarterback away from being a really, really interesting, fun team. They're fun to watch.
No, definitely. I hope they get that quarterback in the draft. And then just offensive line pieces, and that's it. Because, like, even like you mentioned, We know the front seven is loaded, but that the back half of that defense has been playing awesome this year too.
Yeah, no, like they've done a good job. Like, well, it's, I think it's the Ron Rivera effect and getting rid of Allen, and they're finally turning things around a little bit, and things are trending up. I like Washington. I like their colors, and I hope they just stay the football team.
I'm still not sure how I feel. I definitely like their colors. I agree with you. But I don't know if they should pick a name or just stay the football team. If they make the playoffs, they should stay the football team.
It totally depends on what name they pick.
Yeah, like I have very low expectations, so yeah.
Okay, speaking of low expectations, underwhelming performance.
Well done. I'm sticking in the same game. I'm going with CeeDee Lamb, and it's like, I don't know. It wasn't that bad, but 5 catches, 20 yards, had the drop in the end zone. It was just like selfishly.
That's what stands out.
Yeah, exactly. That play. And then selfishly, I wanted to see Lamb put on a show on Thanksgiving. So, again, the Cowboys were shit, but I don't know. I wanted more.
I put him for needs to step it up just because there's not a whole lot going right in Dallas, and he's been one of the few things that has gone right this season, and you just hope. It is so sad that they have him, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and it's just all going to waste.
And especially with how great that offense was with Dak healthy early in the season. They're on pace to break records, man. And then it's just falling apart.
And Zeke's not even the best running back on the team anymore.
That's correct. Memphis, running back you, baby.
I'm going to go with another rookie wide receiver who was actually supposed to play on Thanksgiving but got to play on Wednesday. Chase Claypool, 6 for 52 against Baltimore, but that wide receiver core as a whole was dropping absolutely everything. Now, part of it with Claypool is Ben Roethlisberger's deep ball is not very good. It's not what it used to be. And you see them take at least once a game a deep shot to Claypool. And they did it early against Baltimore, and he had a step, and the ball was underthrown. He still should have caught it, but the ball was underthrown, and I think it kind of threw him off a little bit. And it just – he can't be dropping those passes. But, again, it's hard to just kill him when Juju Smith-Schuster and Deontay Johnson was even worse. No. But the opportunities seem to be there for that offense to produce much more than it did, and its wide receivers kind of let down.
No, I put him here as well. I wasn't going to name him because I figured you were going to go there, but I put him down. And yeah, like when you look at the stat sheet, it wasn't that bad at all. But no, I totally agree with you.
Do you have anybody else? Because I put another one.
I put Claypool, but those are my two.
Okay. I put Julian Blackman. He didn't look tremendous against the Titans. Got beat deep in coverage a couple times. Was just kind of slow to react. Now part of that is the front seven could not stop Derrick Henry. and it was just a bad game from everybody on the Colts, so it's hard to kill Julian Blackman. And I mean, I'm not too stressed about it. I was just kind of sad because I've loved watching him play this year.
No, I mean, that's fair, especially when he's been one of the best rookies in the league. Like, that's an underwhelming performance.
That's another guy who I wouldn't mind seeing with Justin Herbert, though. Arthur Smith.
Yeah, no, that'd be interesting for sure. With Najee Harris, baby.
Draft Najee Harris. Yes. Okay, who looks like a hit?
Hey, you know who finally had his flashy game? Javon Kinlaw. So I had to give it to him. Because guess what? He had a pick six. And it was just great eyes on the play. He ate up 2 blocks off the bat and then kind of backed off the line. And then the rest of the front kind of just got the pressure because he ate 2 blocks. And then he sat there, made the catch, and housed it, which when he caught the ball, you would not have thought he's taking it to the house. It was a nice run. He also just looked really good against the run, working up and down the line of scrimmage, had a few tackles there, had another pressure on Jared Goff. And interesting enough, you probably wouldn't have felt it if you watched the game. This was the least snaps he played all season, which kind of a curious thing when it was probably his most impactful game, I mean, easily. So, like, it's kind of interesting that his most impactful performance came with the least opportunity. Maybe it lit a fire. I don't know what to make of that exactly. But Kinlaw building off of this performance would be huge for the Niners. I mean, they're technically still in the hunt for the playoffs. They're not dead yet. So We'll see. And just
Kyle
and just
Shanahan, great coach.
He is a great coach, and the Rams. You know what? Also, they play the rest of the division tough, so that's big for them.
I put Logan Wilson, who it wasn't a big stat stuffing game or anything against the Giants, but he was flying around. He looked good when he was asked to cover. He had a big TFL where he shot a gap and looked fucking awesome. I think next year, week one, he will be their starting Mike linebacker without a doubt. I think part of why he's kind of on a lower snap count right now is just Josh Bynes is a captain. Of course, Josh Bynes is a captain. And he just knows the defense, and that's kind of what's kept Logan Wilson out of being a full-time starter. But I do think next year he's going to be the dude.
I totally agree. And, I mean, we haven't talked about him in a couple weeks, but if you watch, like, the middle stretch of Bengals games, you saw a lot of flashes from Logan Wilson.
And who looks like a miss for you?
I'm kind of putting this one here because I already mentioned I wanted to talk about him. So this is kind of just to generate content, but I put Mekhi Becton, all right? And not in a negative way at all, but in a negative way for me. He was technically my OT number four. I had him behind Andrew Thomas, so I'm not going to pat myself on the back there. I mean, he went 11th. I had him 13th that overall sucks. On my board. I'm not too stupid, but he's fantastic. He's fantastic. And it was just another game where he was absolutely rock solid in pass protection against the Dolphins. And that front has been getting pressure legit for a long time now. And he looks solid, and in the run game, he was just mauling people as he always does. And getting to the second level, bullying linebackers and defensive backs, it's just so impressive to see a man of that size, which there's not many men that size, and how well he moves at that size. It's amazing. And you know what? I have another kind of interesting thing I noticed. I'm not sure what to make of it either, is when Becton doesn't have anyone pressure him immediately in pass protection, he kind of stands near the line of scrimmage and, like, waiting to pick up another rusher, even though you know there's no rusher coming. Now, I'm sure this is, like, intended by the coaches, but I think the Finns picked this up in film study and exploited it a couple times because they just sometimes they just didn't test Becton and pressure the rest of the line, and it worked. One time, Darnold, like, basically ran into Becton's ass. So while it'd be nice to see Becton a little more swivelly, Maybe next year, and like cleaning up the mess of the rest.
Look for work.
Sorry? Yeah, looking for work, exactly. And cleaning up the mess because the rest of the offensive line's a mess. It's also such a testament that teams would just attack everywhere else except for him. But he was awesome. He was so good.
What was I gonna say, AJ? Oh, I was gonna tell you. I feel like we both missed on AJ Terrell because AJ Terrell seems, every week he seems to be getting a little bit better, a little bit better, and a little bit better. And against the Raiders, I thought he was really impressive. He's playing with a lot of swagger, a lot of energy. He is the Falcons' top corner. The Falcons' defense played a lot better under Raheem Morris. They shut down the Raiders' passing attack. He is super physical. He attacks the ball. He attacks the run. He just seems like a straight, like, he's giving me those early season Jalen Johnson vibes where it's just like kind of straight business with him. Like, he just seems so NFL ready all of a sudden. And I was very, very impressed with his game. And I think he was one of the best rookies this week. I actually debated between him and Chase Young for my defensive rookie of the week. That's how good I thought he played.
It was kind of, it's very strange because he missed, what, 2 or 3 weeks on the COVID list. And then since he came back from that, which would have been around week 7-ish off the top of my head, like you said, just keeps getting better and better and better. And it was like a big improvement in play because you watch the first couple weeks and it was like a matchup with DK Metcalf week one where he had like a flashy play or two, but then he just getting cooked the rest of the time. And then it's just getting better every single week. And you're right. He's really turned around. And I know PFF is giving him credit. I think he's like top 20-ish for corner grades, but not too much credit from elsewhere. So I think that's a good point to bring up.
That Falcons defense in general, I was having a lot of fun watching them just freaking wreck the Raiders. They have, like, Deion Jones is obviously a dude.
Yeah.
But, like, even though they don't have a stud pass rusher,
like the def- like on the edge, the defense looked like Keanu Neal, healthy Keanu Neal is so fun. Like I said, AJ Terrell is awesome. Deion Jones is awesome. Foy is a dude. I'm going to mention another Falcons linebacker in a little bit who happens to be a rookie. But yeah, just really, really fun when things are going right for the Falcons because they have guys everywhere. Yeah, just never seems to work out.
It's been what? Since they lost the Super Bowl, it's just injuries and well, mainly injuries and just not all coming together for them. It's they've been such a weird franchise the last half decade.
You know what's been weird the last half decade, AJ? My pubes. That's why support for Seven Rounds in Heaven comes from Manscaped, who is the best men's below the belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Jingle balls to the walls, fellas. Listen up. Untrimmed pubes are a thing of the past. It's time to gear up and get yourself the gift of shaving this holiday season. I'm talking about the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. This revolutionary company, Manscaped, has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 3.0 has proprietary advanced skin-safe technology, so this trimmer cuts your nuts. On your nuts, not cuts them. Just like, you can shave your balls with it, is what that means. It's also waterproof, so you can use it in the shower. The Lawnmower 3.0 comes inside their brand new Perfect Package 3.0, which makes for the perfect gift this holiday season. It's literally everything you need to keep trimmed, cut-free, and smelling nice down there. Opposed to untrimmed, full of cuts, and smelling bad down there. And don't use the same trimmer on your face as you're using on your balls. That's just nasty, and you'll get face crabs. The Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 also includes the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant moisturizer. I don't leave the house without it. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting it on the smelliest part of your body? Your balls stink. Speaking of sweaty and sticky balls, I'm thankful for the Crop Reviver. This product, along with the Crop Preserver, keeps your balls from sweating, smelling, and sticking. It's kind of the best product they have, to be honest. My balls are always sticking, and not anymore. And these products smell good. Their manly scent is attractive and will help set the mood, if you know what I mean. The Perfect Package also comes with a pair of Manscaped boxers that'll keep your junk feeling fresh all day. It's time to upgrade those overused pairs of boxers to Manscaped's high-performance anti-chafing boxers. Tis the season to Manscaped, so get yourself, your dad, your brother, your friends, your boss, the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. Maybe you don't get it for your boss. I don't know how that would go. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code armchair at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. Also, you know who else will thank you? Your wallet. If you go to Bet Online, you just go online and you bet at Bet Online. Guess what? College football, college basketball, the NBA is going to start soon. We got a whole Christmas slate coming, baby. Bowl season, NFL playoffs. Oh, I'm getting turned on just thinking about it. So, go make Christmas gift money by betting online and use code armchair to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. AJ, who needs to take advantage of their opportunity and step it up in this rookie class?
To throw some cold water on you getting turned on, one of both of our favorite first-round guys, Jalen Reagor, who, I mean, yeah, the team is a disaster. Yes, Carson Wentz stinks like non-manscaped balls, but Jalen Reagor was a first round pick, right? Like his team is desperate for playmakers. You look at what we alluded to; the rest of his fellow first round rookies are doing. I mean, CeeDee Lamb quieter this week, but a lot of them have been amazing. Like he needs to start.
They've at least had a game.
Exactly. Earn looked good, and Reagor hasn't had a game or really looked good. I mean, he's been banged up, but still, like he needs to start making things happen. This is what, 3 catches, 11 yards on 7 targets. Not really any drops, but the targets were bad. But still, with the Eagles still in that NFC East race, the worst race in history, he needs to start providing a spark for that offense. And I mean,
I put him on not ready to play just because he just didn't seem in sync with Carson Wentz at all. I'm pretty sure he ran the wrong route one time.
Yeah, on the screen interception. Pass. Yeah.
Yes. That's kind of what made me think he's not ready to play is he's not running the right routes.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who we know has the athleticism, the speed to be a game breaker for them.
but you haven't seen it at all. You haven't even seen flashes since week one of it. And the other thing is, personally, I loved his ability as a yak player coming out of TCU. Yeah. You haven't seen that either. He's not breaking tackles. He's not making any special plays. When a lot of these other rookies are at least having moments, and he hasn't even had a moment.
And on top of it all, Justin Jefferson was the very next pick.
So you love telling us who the picks are, right?
I do. I always do. My two favorite things are telling you who the next pick was and tracking trades and figuring out who the hell these draft picks actually became.
That's why this works, because I don't like learning things like that. Or taking the time. I like learning them. I don't like taking the time to find them out on my own. That's why I use you.
It's just Wikipedia holes. That's all you got to fall down into.
I put CeeDee Lamb for this. I also put Jalen Johnson, who's been not the same guy that... Yeah. Not that he's playing... He's not getting torched or anything, but he has not been the same guy we saw those first couple weeks where it looked like he might be a Pro Bowl rookie, a Defensive Rookie of the Year type guy. He's struggled more... I think more and more as the weeks go on, maybe hitting that rookie wall a little bit. He struggled against the Packers... And for this Bears team to be competitive, their defense needs to be at its absolute best, and that's why I think he's kind of... It's hard to kill him because he was playing at such a high level. It's hard to kill him for kind of taking a step back and hitting that rookie wall, but they do need him to step it up.
No, that's fair, and I think the Bears defense as a whole has kind of been slipping a bit, and I do think you're right, though. It's the reverse A.J. Terrell. Maybe A.J. Terrell's is zapping his powers because... It's each week he's kind of taking a little step back and back. And like you said, they're not a bad game. And like Devontae Adams is maybe the toughest matchup in all of football right now. So it's not like it's brutal, but you're definitely right. You're definitely right.
When am I wrong? Who's not ready to play? I said I got Jalen Rager here. So who you got?
I got a player that went a lot lower in the fifth round. Another one that's not really fair, but Colton McKivitz got thrown in to start at right guard for the San Francisco 49ers. And as you can kind of anticipate, Aaron Donald just absolutely ruined him. To give him some credit, because you know I like to always find the gem in the dark here, but he had his moments in the run game, which I guess is promising, but he's not going to see Aaron Donald every week, but it was ugly, man. It was like at least five times in pass pro where Donald just won, like, before Mullins could even get the snap or get two steps into his drop. It was just instant victories, and it's not fair for him. But, hey, I put him here, and hopefully he can get not a Hall of Famer next week and put more together in the run game like he kind of flashed.
Okay, jumping to best day three rookie. I alluded to this earlier. I put Mikael Walker as one of – I put three of them, but I put Mikael Walker, who I don't think he made a tackle in the game – but he just brings so much energy. He's the third starting linebacker, so he plays like, I don't know, 30-35% of the snaps. But he brings a ton of energy, looked good in coverage, flying around the field, and he kind of fits the same mold as Deion Jones and as Foy, where not the biggest linebacker in the world, but kind of a psychopath with his energy and such an explosive dude. And I just think the Falcons have a type at linebacker, and he's fit well as that third guy for them.
Yeah, you know what? I liked him before the draft. Then I even thought he went too high. They took him in the fourth round, if I remember correctly. But he's been like quietly good all season.
Just like Foy was last year.
There you go.
Who you got here?
I got two. My first one I'll go with one guy I've really enjoyed all year, Gabe Davis, who was another 3-catch, 79-yard touchdown performance. The touchdown was easy. it was a sweet trick play where Cole Beasley threw him the touchdown. But then he had an awesome 44-yard catch down the sideline where he just went up and plucked the ball over a defender. I wouldn't say he mossed him, but he went up and it was awesome. And then his other catch, only three again, was just a nice chain move around a little comeback route. And I'm just excited to see Gabe Davis get a full, hopefully normal offseason in Buffalo and see how his role expands there. Because I think we'll see him secure that third receiver slot spot, getting down, becoming like a real downfield threat. Like, I think Gabe Davis could be a real, real interesting guy to keep your eye on. And he's been really good as a rookie.
You love UCF.
I do.
Well, guess what, AJ? I love Louisiana. So my other two best day three rookies are Bears rookie receiver Darnell Mooney and Chiefs corner Legarius Sneed, both from schools in Louisiana.
Wow. Well done.
Mooney, I think, will be putting up such good numbers if he was literally with any other quarterback.
Yeah.
And Sneed's a guy who we talked about early in the season. He looked really good and then got hurt. Now he's back and he's playing meaningful snaps. And I think he's going to be a starter for the Chiefs for a while. He's a very good athlete and he's just always around the football.
Yeah, I know for sure. And what, he had two picks in his first two games before getting hurt, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey. This one's going to make you happy, Rob. You know who had their best game of the year? Troy Pride, baby, the bear man himself. He only gave up one catch on four targets. Had one pass deflection officially, but he made a play on another one. And just like in constantly good positioning for the Panthers against that Vikings passing offense that usually finds some nice stuff. And all the Jefferson plays and BC Johnson in this game, plays were just not really going Pride's way. It was a quiet, good performance, and Pride's been pretty this year, so that's just really promising for him.
Okay, I'm gonna let you tell me your confidence level on if you will know who my best undrafted rookie is when I name him, like if you will have ever even heard of him.
Oh, if I've ever heard of them. 70,
and here comes the train,
the confidence train. Okay, I'm boosting my number up. I'm going 80. I'm 80% sure I'm going to know him.
Okay. Nico Lalos.
Oh, wow. I was too high. I have no idea who that is.
It's because I didn't know who he was until he intercepted Brandon Allen. undrafted rookie of Dartmouth. Actually went to the same high school as LeBron James. 6'5", 270. And intercepted Brandon Allen, and I was like, who is this guy? He's moving well. Look how big he is. And I found out I had no idea who he was, but he was an all-Ivy League selection at Dartmouth, went to St. Vincent St. Mary in Akron, and I don't know. He's part of the reason the Giants are in first in the NFC East, so he is my best undrafted rookie.
What's your confidence meter that you're going to guess who my best UDFA rookie is?
Oh, he did. Sorry, I'm just reading his bio right now. He declined MAC scholarships to play at Dartmouth and preferred walk-on options with Ohio State and Notre Dame.
Oh, okay. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I am 75% sure I know who your undrafted rookie is. It's James Robinson. I'm 100%.
Of course, it's James Robinson. Who, fuck, man. 128 yards, 5 catches, 38 yards, a touchdown on the ground. I don't even know what to say about him anymore. He's everything you want in a running back, all right? Firstly and foremostly, that's not a word I know, but it doesn't matter. He didn't cost any draft capital. That's great. He never has negative runs, and he turns negative plays into positive plays constantly. He's consistently breaks first contact, and he can catch the football. What more can you ask for? Maybe he's not the guy that turns, 8-yard runs into 20-yard runs, but he's the guy that's turning 2-yard runs into 8-yard runs, and that might be more important in today's NFL. So, I love James Robinson. You're right. I can't believe I kind of blanked on him earlier. But he's the king. He's the king. I keep trying to figure out who he reminds me of, and I can't put my finger on it yet.
He reminds me of Jim Brown.
Yeah, I was thinking Walter Payton, to be honest, but that's a good one too.
Thank you. No, he is a joy. I love when undrafted running backs are sick. It's my favorite thing in the world.
I know it is. I love it too.
I'll give you two rookies who flashed. One, T. Higgins, who I thought was going to disappear with Brandon Allen at quarterback, but he ended up being the Bengals' best outside threat, caught a touchdown. It kind of only just confirmed to me once again that this guy's going to be very good with Joe Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Tyler Boyd, I think, are great with each other. And then I thought Andrew Thomas, same game, I thought Andrew Thomas had his best game I'd seen maybe of the season.
Good. I like to hear that.
I mean, hey, Mark Colombo's gone, and look what happens. I don't know. I don't know if there's correlation there, but he just looked very stable. Wasn't, like, amazing or anything, but handled Carl Lawson really, really well. And Carl Lawson's a not, like, an elite pass rusher, but a good pass rusher. He handled him well. He did a really good job against Carl Lawson's hands. He kept everything on time. His feet, and when he wasn't shooting his hands early. He wasn't coming late. Everything seemed to be on time. He was getting to his landmarks. And there was times where he got a little bit longy, but for the most part, I thought it was a really solid game.
You know what it is? These games matter now for the Giants. So Andrew Thomas is turning it up, baby.
Yeah, he's used to playing at Georgia where games always really mattered.
Exactly. I'll give you two receivers and a defender. I know we do it a lot, but I'm still impressed by Denzel Mims. Like, another one where he just had a nice catch on an in route in traffic. A really interesting one where he looked like it was just a little short hitch, but then he kind of like felt the space and adjusted to break in, or Darnold just put it there. I'm not sure. It was kind of a really neat little throw. And just a really impressive hands catch, like kind of around a defender, and then big yak on that. And it was on the 3rd and 9, got about, I think he got 30 yards there. Nearly picked up another 3rd and 16, got called for offensive pass interference, but in general, really promising. And I know we've talked about him since he's been back, like almost consistently here, but the Jets got to feel really good about what they're seeing from Denzel Mims. the other receiver, how about Colin Johnson for the Jags, who had a big game, 4 catches, 96 yards, a touchdown. The touchdown was pretty sweet. It was just a nice catch and run on a crossing route. And just like every time he touched the ball, he looked good. And early in the season, he was just more of the, like they're giving him some red zone looks and let him be a catch, you know, a jump ball type of guy. And it was a little hit and miss. Sometimes he looked good. Sometimes it wasn't working. And now it, with a couple of receivers going down, Chris Conley and such, and he got more playing time and he looked they're pretty good. And Mike Glennon is not that bad.
Okay, for out of nowhere Rook, I'm going with, he's not out of nowhere, but I just wasn't expecting it, so I'm counting it. Adam Troutman, and it wasn't as a pass catcher, just caught one pass for 8 yards. Taysom Hill looked just horrible. This game was not fun for me at all. No. I picked it when we were picking games thinking it'd be hilarious. It wasn't. It was just horrible. But the Saints ran for 229 yards on the ground. Adam Troutman looked phenomenal as a blocker. Like he's going to be one of the best blocking tight ends in the league, which I wasn't expecting him to be that dominant as a run blocker. But yeah, he just looked great. He played 61% of snaps. They were going a lot of heavy because their quarterback is a wide receiver or maybe a running back, just like the Broncos. But yeah, no, I was very pleased. And I think like Jared Cook has been very inconsistent this year. Yeah. So I think maybe next year becomes the Troutman show as Jared Cook ages. People forget Jared Cook's like very old.
Yes. I'll give you two that also aren't really the most out of nowhere. One you brought up last week, Bryce Hall. I thought he had a big bounce back game against Devontae Parker. It was a really physical battle, to be honest. He lost a few, but he looked pretty good. Like, he definitely wasn't getting out physical by Parker. Had a nice PBU, 6 tackles. So, like, even when Parker was making the grabs, Hall was, like, right there, nearly making a play on the ball and then making the tackle if he didn't. Got called for pass interference as well. But it was like a short back shoulder throw that was kind of tricky. And he actually made the play on the ball but didn't get his head around. So they threw the flag. One of those where I'm like, you got to let the guys play, but it's probably the right call. So after you know, Lamar Jackson didn't look good again, Davis got beat for a touchdown by Gesicki, but kind of wasn't that bad the rest of the game. this Jets defense is more entertaining to watch now because they have so many rookies contributing. And you know, I was a huge fan, anyone who's listened to the show, of Bryce Hall. And he went in the 5th round because of injuries and such. But he's been hurt all year. But this is interesting. And hey, the other one I had to throw in here because you mentioned him for start the Rook last week. Ben Barge got to play, baby. He didn't start, but he played 52% of the snaps. He definitely looked better than Tyler Shatley. There were some hiccups in pass protection at times. The anchor was a little off, but it was just up and down. But from the first snap he got in there, he was mean in the run game. And I'm sure a lot of people saw on Twitter the big celebration when they pushed the pile to get Robinson in. I think Bartsch should be there in the lineup going forward. He's looked good.
Hell yeah. Speaking of start the rook, sadly, mine is Alex Highsmith this week because Bud Dupree tore his ACL. Contract year, was having a Pro Bowl year. Hopefully he still gets that money because I think he was going to get a massive contract. The Steelers took Highsmith in the third round, expecting to lose Bud Dupree this offseason. They lose him a little earlier. So I'm sad, but I'm also a little bit excited to see what Highsmith brings to the table. He's flashed as a rotational guy. Mm-hmm. He's looked good when on the field, and it's gonna be weird. It's gonna be weird throwing a rookie into this like elite defense. But I'm hoping that he is the starting option. So,
you know what? While we're talking Steelers, I'll talk about their next pick after Highsmith, who was Anthony McFarlane, and he looks more explosive than anyone in that backfield. So I just want to see him get worked in more. Like, why not? Like, and he looked pretty good catching the ball.
I agree.
Yeah,
so I agree. I think he should be the complimentary back to James Conner. Benny Snell is not great. Jalen Samuels terrible. I think like 5 touches a game doesn't seem too dramatic.
No, and especially when, you know, this Steelers offense is running the ball in short passes, and McFarlane can do both of those things. And if he can be a nice receiving outlet, and then, you know, like Connor's, he can catch all right, I guess, at times. But McFarlane definitely with more juice than any of those backs.
So tune in next week when Alex Highsmith and Anthony McFarlane are the offensive and defensive rookies of the week.